Lawmakers have a few choices. First, there's Senate Bill 1, crafted by Democrats and already approved by both legislative chambers. Then there's Senate Bill 1 as re-envisioned by Governor Bruce Rauner, who last week used his veto pen to carve out big chunks of SB 1 and add some novel flourishes of his own. Before either of these can happen, lawmakers will wait for spreadsheets to be produced showing exactly how much money school districts will supposedly receive under each plan. But spreadsheets are the school funding equivalent of Cliff Notes, a shortcut that skips details that might show up on the test. That's especially true with this new funding model. It has built-in recalibration mechanisms to annually rebalance what each district needs to achieve adequacy against its capacity to bear that cost. Take, for example, student enrollment.
Under SB 1, if you lose student population, you'll get less money from the new state distributions because your adequacy target will be reduced. It's not as if the formula ignores it.
That's Ralph Martieri, director of the Bipartisan Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. He has been working on this school funding model since 2010.
But if you're below adequacy, you still get more money than you got the year before, so you could move towards adequacy. That's the beauty of how SB 1 works.
This particular feature got the axe under Rauner's veto. He would cut dollars for schools with declining enrollments, even if they're already underfunded. The prime example of such a district is Chicago Public Schools. CPS appears to have inspired several of the governor's changes, like the one involving special development programs called Tax Increment Financing, or TIFs. Cities and counties create TIF districts to encourage development by suspending tax rates for a set period of time. State Senator Jason Berrickman, a Republican from Bloomington, is assigned by the governor to work toward a school funding compromise. I asked him whether TIFs were on the table.
In our negotiations, the discussions about TIFs specifically have centered around whether we could make changes to prospective TIF districts. In other words, TIF districts that don't exist today but are set up in the future.
But Rauner's veto leapfrogs his own negotiating team and recalculates how much property tax each school district can raise by simply pretending they have full access to property values as though TIF restrictions don't exist. Berrickman, who has sponsored multiple school funding plans himself, told me he didn't even see the governor's veto until it was made public.
That's right.
And you're pretty much the point guy. You're the Republican point guy. Why would you not see it?
Well, we all have different roles in this.
What is yours?
Well, I'm a Republican legislator. I'm certainly not the governor.
I emailed Rauner's spokesperson, Laurel Patrick, to ask about his changes regarding TIF and another common property tax cap called PTEL. She said districts use those to hide property value and get more funding from the state. One easy example is Chicago, she wrote, which is riddled with TIF districts in wealthy areas that allows CPS to hide its true property wealth. Rauner also slashed a $200 million block grant from CPS, deleted a provision that would adjust for inflation, and is pushing for a new program that would create tax breaks for middle-income families to send their children to private schools. These changes would hurt districts beyond CPS. State Senator Andy Menar, the Bunker Hill Democrat who proposed Senate Bill 1, summarizes Rauner's measures as an attack on public schools.
This thing is not going to lead to greater equity. It's not going to lead to adequacy. It is a manipulation of the law to divest the state from public education over time. That's what it is.
This game may drag on a while longer. It seems there won't be enough lawmakers in town to take up business until next week. I'm Dusty Rhodes.